Hey, everybody. Welcome back for another week of the Retro Recall podcast. We got a special episode in store for us today. We're joined today by Dan from the OVGA podcast. You can also find him over on the Original Art Collector group on Facebook. We're going to have a special discussion, kind of tell you a little bit about the art collecting community, which many might not realize there's original paintings out there for these old games that everybody cherishes and loves. So we're going to tell you a little bit about some of the process behind it, where to find art, what kind of art is out there, and some of them share a little bit of each of our collections. So just kind of to kick it off today a little bit, we're going to talk maybe a little roundtable about favorite box arts. So, Bill, why don't we start off with you? I know you've already got a bunch probably you're thinking about on favorite art.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Steve. Man, lots of different favorites come to mind, but I have to gravitate towards 8 and 16-bit like I usually do for most anything. I really enjoy a lot of artwork by Tom Dubois. Some special, you know, ones that I really think stand out are Castlevania Bloodlines and Turtles in Time. Castlevania 3 on NES, I think, has a lot of detail that is really, really remarkable. And just all that hand-drawn, painted artwork of his that are just really striking. Konami had really something special back then when they hired him to do a lot of their artwork. So those are just some of my favorites.
Rom, you want to chime in?
Yeah. So I think go-to would probably be, one would think it's something Mega Man related. We were actually just discussing that. However, I was just thinking, I was like, you know, Kid Icarus, it's basic because it basically takes it from the game, but it's all about nostalgia for me. And I think the Kid Icarus box art to me is just like, I don't know, it kind of got me into the game. Just seeing, I'm like, oh, this is what the game looks like. And it's basic. I mean, I'm looking at that Sonic picture back there. It's definitely not near as detailed as that, but to me, like, that kind of it's the nostalgia that kind of brings it toward me, and that's why I like it. But if we're talking hand drawn, definitely Mega Man 4, but Kid Icarus, I think, is at the top for me.
And Dan, I know this has got to be a hard question for you, being a long term
artist. I don't know how to answer this kind of thing anymore. I mean, after like 15 years of collecting this kind of stuff, I don't even know where to start anymore. I like different pieces and different artists for different reasons, you know, like some of them, kind of like you were saying, you know, Rom, some of them I appreciate for nostalgia, some of them I appreciate for like the quality of the artwork, some of them I just love the game, like I like a lot of them. And, but you know, to your point, Bill, like Tom Dubois, love his work, and, you know, I was always super interested in trying to find him. I banged my head against the wall in terms of trying to find him, like doing Google searches every day for 2 years till I finally found him. And I was super excited to do that. I have one of his originals behind me there, you know, Blades of Steel, which being Canadian is a lot of fun for me because, you know, it's a stereotype, but it's true. We all love hockey. And so the Dubois stuff is great because he did a lot of really kind of exciting, dynamic, over-the-top kind of stuff. Like he didn't do the Turtles in Time that you were talking about, Bill, as kind of a laid back sort of group. It was like the badass version of the Turtles, right? Like these looked like the Turtles that could murder you, you know? So he's great. And then you just, I've come to appreciate others like Greg Martin and Greg Winters and so many others. But I mean, I mentioned those three because they did, quality work and just a real breadth of work. And in addition to a breadth of work, a lot of big titles. So great images, great quality, big titles, recognizable publishers, recognizable franchises, all that kind of stuff in one. Lots of other artists were just as talented, but maybe didn't get, you know, working on the same sort of quality of games or whatever.
Yeah, and I know this is getting to become a harder question for me when I thought about this now that I've been into the art collecting now a couple years. Originally, when I started out, it was all about games that I remember or kind of things I have nostalgic ties to. But as I got further into art, I started focusing in on the details and how the images were rendered. And I've gained greater appreciation for artists and titles maybe I overlooked before. And when you see the painting in person or you see the full image, sometimes you think a lot differently about the piece than you used to.
100%. Yeah, oh, yeah. And, you know, that could be to the good or the bad, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you might appreciate a piece that maybe you didn't think twice about. And then conversely, you might sort of fall a little bit out of love with a piece once you see it in person.
Yeah.
And, you know, size is a thing too, right? Like we'll get into lots of other aspects of artwork, I'm sure. But like some pieces are kind of small, like they could be 15 inches and some pieces could be 40 inches in giant. And when something is ugly and it's huge, it's like especially ugly, right? Because now like there's no hiding from it. It's just giant and on your wall. And it's even worse when it's kind of big and at that size. Whereas usually if it's a great piece, you want it nice and big. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think nowadays, now that I know like a little more about Greg Martin, like I still love Greg Martin Sonic stuff. I don't own any Greg Martin Sonic other than some prelim stuff, but you know, that's next fiddle for me getting a Duncan Guterich. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but you know, I really like that piece. I've definitely appreciated the Konami artworks over the years, Castlevania's, Tom Dubois, I love, or Dubois. How do you say it, Dan? You were just talking about this.
Well, yeah, I've always said Dubois, but I've heard him pronounce it Dubois. So
Dubois.
I guess we have to go with Dubois. But okay. I can't. I've been saying Dubois for so long that I don't know if I can change that habit now.
That makes me think of Chicago Bears, the Bears. Yeah,
Dubois.
No, his artwork is awesome. And every time I look, I'm always finding something new I like. And I go after stuff that I'm nostalgic for first. But I've also gained appreciation for really fine detailed artwork. So when I see an art piece and it's just really well rendered, that just kind of draws me in, mm-hmm. As long as the topics of semi-interest. And for whatever reason, I really enjoy I've had this conversation with you before, Dan, but golf pieces related to video game, fishing pieces, which I got one like prelim from you on the fishing one, which I was totally excited to get. But, you know, guilty pleasure of mine. Nobody else is going after this fishing and golf things, probably other than you and I and maybe one or two others. So,
I've got others I haven't shown you. I'll have to share it with you at some point.
Yeah, definitely do. I'd love to see. So I guess the next, you know, thing I'd want to talk about a little bit is what makes a good box art? That's something that comes up a lot. And everybody may have a different perspective on that. But we'll go right around like we started with. Bill, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that draws attention, right? I mean, if it's just bland and boring colors, it's not going to be striking. It's not going to pique interest. I mean, back in the day when we were strolling through rental aisles, I mean, that's what we rented games based on was the artwork, you know? So if it's not bright and colorful, I'm thinking, you know, 90s. I mean, there's an NES game called Totally Rad with a bright yellow... bright yellow artwork on the front with this crazy green creature, you know, things like that, that have some depth effects that, you know, almost, you know, jumping out at you almost, you know, things like that are definitely important to make it interesting. That's what I think, at least.
What about you, Rom?
To me, like, I focus on like the times I've been burnt on art, because you're like, oh man, this is gonna be so great. Like Kid Nicky, for some reason you're looking at that and Demon Sword, you're like, man, this game looks really cool. The cover art looks just really awesome, and the Demon Sword, you're just jumping really high, and that was about it. And Kid Nicky, everything looks like human like and then you're playing it on the NES and you're like, this guy looks very dumpy and really squished together and does not match up. And like I said, it's more of a negative. It's more negative how I feel like I was like sold a bill of goods, but that's kind of me. And like last thing is, I've said it before in another episode. Superman 64. I mean, the cover art was really good. And then I played the game, and the term hot garbage I used a lot, but it still stands the test. But it's not to take back from the artist. The artist did a great job, you know. But it's just more so like it's just not indicative. But
you felt duped. You felt duped.
I did. You know, it was, you know, when you're 8, 9, 10 years old, and that's your weekend, and now it's just completely ruined.
You know, the artwork for that just sold, actually. I don't know if you saw or noticed or whatever, but it was on Heritage a little while ago, maybe how long ago was it, Steve? Would you say it was 3 months ago? I don't even remember.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there, 2, 3 months ago. It wasn't very long ago.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because that one's done like comic book style. So it's just like pen and ink line work with no background, and the rest was just kind of added later. And, so yeah, it sold for $9,000 or something like that, I think it was, just recently.
Yeah, it was definitely under 10. It was somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
I always remember that game because it gets such a bad rap. But yeah, the artwork, like you said, Rom, isn't too bad.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan? Yeah. You probably have a different perspective on this too, what makes a good box art.
You know, yeah, I mean, I guess I agree with everything you guys have said 100%. I mean, you know, Bill mentioned that it's got to grab you. And, you know, absolutely. I mean, the name of the game is to kind of stand out and to kind of be visually interesting, right? But I think there's two elements to that. There's like the design elements, like, you know, you were talking about, Bill, where you've got, you know, the layering and the logo and the bright color choice of the cardboard. Like, those are all kinds of things outside the art that kind of help to accentuate the art. And then there's the actual kind of physical, like the hand-drawn part that that should grab you. So hopefully it should be like a really good image, but also good design. You know, like I think both of those things can kind of come into how much you appreciate a box.
So for me, when I think of like good box art, and I'm thinking like 80s, 90s, and I'm a kid strolling in that store looking at the old VidPro cards. Anybody remember those? You go in Toys R Us and you want a game, you got to pull the card out, bring it to the counter, get your game. And they always had the great artwork on there. Or if you're in a rental store, half the time the games weren't on the shelf. They would have some kind of printout, or they'd have the cardboard box with styrofoam filled in it. And it was always about like explosions, guns, like everything had to be bigger, badder back then. You know, it was like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone days. And even like you look at the art for Contra, I mean, it pretty clearly looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone on there. And
it's all bare chests and M16s, right? Like who's got the bigger gun and more rip packs and all that.
What's a wilder pull you in like, yeah, I want to play that game than that? And I love the shooter arts back in the day too, because it was just explosions or cool spaceships, super detailed. And I feel like that really like grabbed you in back then. And for me with box arts, if it's not something I'm nostalgic for, I'm looking for that cool factor, like something that's going to look awesome. Like, wow, like, you know, I wish I played that game, even if it was bad.
Yeah, you know, like trying to define good art is a little bit like trying to define, like, it's really hard to do, but you just know it when you see it, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, it's also subjective. I mean, I might like something that, you know, Bill likes, but Rom doesn't like, and you, Steve, maybe you feel kind of halfway about, like, there's no magic formula, but at the end of the day, does it grab you is the first thing I think about.
Yeah, definitely. And, I guess this kind of segues into a good topic, but you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, multiple times over. So, I mean, what got you into art collecting, Dan? How did you get into this whole video game thing?
Yeah, I'll answer that. But by the way, I appreciate that about you, because, you know, I really like sort of the, you know, the enthusiasm you have, and you've kind of, you know, started last couple years ago. You're learning as you go. You're super kind of keen about it. You know, when I listened to the first episode of this podcast, you mentioned almost right away that you'd be talking about art, and I couldn't help but smile a little bit, because, you know, it just showed your enthusiasm. In terms of how I got sucked into all this. I'd been collecting factory sealed back like starting around 02. And so I was collecting that and collecting that. And one day I noticed on the like some of the Data East boxes, and it's on a couple of the SNK boxes as well, that little FC monogram on the artwork. So there's a little square with a little FC on those. And I knew from my days comic collecting, because comics was the first thing I collected, I knew that meant Frank Sirocco, who had done some late run Defenders covers and Alien Legion and some other comics like that. And so I looked at that and I thought, huh, so this comic artist has also been doing video game boxes. I wonder, you know, if there are other artists I know that also worked on these boxes, how can I find out more? And I started looking at all my boxes. I went through all the sealed boxes I have, looking for everything. And there was a couple of not even artist names mentioned, because most of the signatures kind of aren't there. But there was an agency mentioned on one of the boxes. And I looked up the owner of the agency. I ended up paying him for a list of the artists he'd worked for and just started contacting them. So I started contacting these guys, and kind of one thing led to another as I made one discovery and learned a little something that led to me kind of looking in another direction. It was just a giant ball of yarn, because at the end of the day, like back then, there was nothing on the internet about any of this. And so it was just trying to learn as I went, and just playing private detective and just chasing down what I could. The first pieces I bought, Adam Harvey had made a large purchase that was related to someone that had sold on eBay that, you know, had a bunch. And so I bought three pieces from him that included this SNES Battletoads that I have here. So I bought three pieces from him, and this is in 2007, late 2000. You know, at the time, you know, I'd seen the JPEGs and whatever, but didn't know what they'd be like in person. Really hadn't bought any art before.
Bill's eyes just lit up. Bill's eyes just lit up.
I'm a Battletoads fan, for sure.
There you go. Glad to hear it.
I love Battletoads, too. You can't help but have a smile on your face when you see that.
Yeah, so I bought three pieces for like $3,500, and so I was thinking at the time, like, oh my god, you know, because that went a long way in 07 for compared to sealed and whatever. Like that went a long way, and you know, I was thinking, ah, oh, what have I done? You know, what am I? And then they came in the mail, and I was like, oh shit, like I'm going to be selling my sealed collection. I'm going to be trying to buy as many of these as I could, and that's basically what happened. You know, so I've been just kind of doing that ever since. Just kind of got hooked like the second I saw.
Wow.
There was the Battletoads, there was Mechanized Attack, and there was Ren and Stimpy Time Warp all in the same package.
Good old Ren and Stimpy.
I love Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, man.
They were so funny back in the day. They used to crack me up.
Oh, man. In high school, I had a Discman, and I had a Powdered Toast Man sticker slapped on it. I love that show.
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of got into the art like a couple years ago. So I realized that art was a thing like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And I wish I would have stumbled upon your Facebook group back then, because I didn't realize it was something that could be procured. I just knew it was there. And it occurred, because I saw Mike Winterbauer had a Kickstarter, and he had a book showing off his original art. So I had backed that, and that was one of the original Kickstarters he had done, you know, a long time ago. And so I was like, wow, this is crazy. But I just didn't think about it. I didn't put two and two together that I could actually, like, reach out to people and buy this kind of stuff. And I should have, in hindsight. But maybe, like, 2 or 3 years after that, I was looking around eBay, and I stumbled on color pages for the original Sonic the Hedgehog comic book. And I know, like, you know, that's something maybe we'll talk about a little later with the styles of art and different things. But the colorist had hand watercolored all these, and he sold me a bunch of them, including some of the early covers. and they look great. Like when you look at them up close visually, all the like numbering and stuff you see sometimes on color guides, it was on like a sheet on top of tracing paper. So when you fold it up, it's just pure watercolor with, you know, printed ink lines. So that was like, all right, I got to start looking for some of this stuff. And somewhere along the way, eventually I stumbled upon the video game art collecting group. And then it just kind of spiraled from there. I don't remember where my next art purchase was. I have bought a few things off of eBay randomly. Like you had posted about Chacon the other day about that being an early, you know, an earlier series than a lot of people knew before the video game. But I have two random Chacon paintings from back in the day. So it's been an interesting ride. I have quite a few pieces now. I feel like my collection's grown a lot, especially over the last 2 years.
How many do you have now, Steve? I mean, you have a few dozen now, don't you?
Yeah, I want to say I'm probably sitting somewhere around 25. Now, not every piece is video game related. I do have a couple others. Like I have a Mighty, I got it behind me. I'll pull it out in a second, but a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the board game. I saw that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
I love Power Rangers as a kid, and I was like, I got to have that.
That was a good-looking painting, too. I remember that was sold on the art group, even though it wasn't, you know, a video game piece. So, yeah, I can see why you bought it. It looks good.
Yeah, it's all airbrushed. I mean, it's a really nice-looking piece. But I'll grab it real quick here.
And if anybody's sort of hearing the term airbrush and doesn't know what that means, you know, most of the time when we think about paintings, that's like with a brush and paint. This is like sprayed through a little tool that you kind of spray through with a finger button or with your mouth. And so it leads to really smooth color without brush strokes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you can just see the quality of the art. You see how smooth all the lines are. I mean, I've grown more and more of a fan of airbrush paintings. This was done by Lonnie Bush, who did quite a few, I think, for Milton Bradley back in the day. But growing up, being a Power Rangers fan, I mean, I think I was a Power Ranger for Halloween as a kid one time. I was Team Tommy all the way. So, I mean, just the opportunity to buy something like that. And there are a lot of, like, what I would call video game adjacent art categories, too, for those of you out there. Whether it's on, you know, things that were TV shows that were turned video games and also had, you know, toys or, you know, board games or whatever. So you can, if you have a favorite series or other things, sometimes you can find art for other categories related, you know, kind of related.
Yeah. Like back in the day, you know, I never thought about it when I was growing up, and I presume you guys didn't either, but really every product had some artist creating a painting to sell the product, because at the end of the day, how else were you going to get an image on there? So everything from like chocolate boxes to VHS tapes to album covers to everything, you know. And now that's gone digital, but
yeah, absolutely. That's kind of a shame. Although I do see a few places are like, yeah, let's go the nostalgic route and hire a painter to do this. I've noticed a few of those here and there. So there may be a few oddities that, like, there was that one that popped up, I think, was done for one of the Atari games that came out on Switch or whatever.
You know, right. And Limited Run Games has done some stuff where they've taken like newly issued art or newly created art and kind of put it on the box. And so there are, as you say, you know, new pieces, just not as many as there were.
Yeah. So that kind of, I mean, we should probably do a little intro around art and what are some basic terms around people. We were just talking about airbrush. What are some of the different like mediums that they paint with? For me, I'm not nearly as much of an expert, but I'm starting to get familiar with a lot of these terms. But, you know, acrylic versus oil painting, that's the first one I seem to see a lot of. And, you know, acrylic, a lot of times what I've learned, and Dan, you can expand on this, is that back in the day, they may have only given these guys like a week or sometimes, you know, a couple of days to get these paintings done. So they had to put these together in fast order. Well, if you do traditional oil painting, it takes a long time for that to dry. So naturally, you know, acrylics were the choice for a lot of these artists. I know there's probably some watercolor and other types of mediums. Gouache, is that how you pronounce that other?
one of the others?
Yeah, that's like a semi-translucent paint, so you can kind of do a, like, you know how you're, if you look at your Sonic 2 piece in the background behind you, you've kind of got the superimposed Eggman on the sky, right? And you have that effect of kind of being able to see the sky and the Eggman at the same time, because Eggman is kind of translucent. That's the idea behind using that kind of paint, is it lets you could kind of layer colors on top of each other without losing the bottom layer entirely.
Yeah. Okay.
But to your point, like, you're absolutely right. Like, the, you know, oil paints, like, take, you know, months to dry, right? So if somebody was working in oil, like Boris Vallejo and Julie Bell, that did a bunch of game boxes, they would paint super thin, like incredibly thin, to be able to dry quick enough to be able to meet the deadline.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I didn't realize they were painting so thin. That's how they got away with the oil painting. Sometimes I just thought, like, in my head, I was going, maybe they're painting these oil paintings, and just because they're so good, they just give them more time, because they're had pretty prolific careers, like Boris or Julie.
That was probably part of it. That was probably part of it. Yeah, I mean, you know, they like Boris, like you said, was already a really well-known, established artist, and was charging more than most artists, and probably was able to get better terms in terms of, like, deadlines and stuff than most of them. Because most of these guys, you're right, were you know, doing overnighters all the time. You know, they'd play with their family during the day, and then they'd go to their art hole upstairs in the attic or whatever, and just paint till the wee hours of the morning, because there was some crushing deadline that, you know, they had to meet.
So what are some of the other types of mediums? Like, I know some of these covers have gone, like, comic book style, like you mentioned Superman 64. So they would basically, I guess, somebody would pencil it, and then it would get inked. And then once it was inked, they would come in and add color later on. So in the comic book world, right, they value the inks more than the kind of finished piece, because that would have been somebody random doing that. Is that correct, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, there really sort of is no finished piece apart from the ink lines, because the rest is kind of done at the printer. Like, they would do a color guide, like you were talking about, you purchased, but that's just a guide for the printer. It wasn't the final, it didn't look exactly the way the color was printed. So yeah. You know, they're kind of done comic book style, or, you know, they might be painted. Somebody like Du Bois used traditional brushes. Most of the guys used airbrush. Hold up your Super Mario box there, Steve. So, fun little tidbit about all the black boxes. You know, and for a long time, I didn't understand this either. That's cut paper. That's construction paper that was, you know, kind of cut into. And the reason I asked for Duck Hunt earlier, I was hoping somebody had a Duck Hunt box, was because you can really tell on that one. Like, all the pixels are different sizes. If that was just a screen grab, it wouldn't look that way. You can actually see the shadows and the cut lines and the irregular cuts if you look really close at, say, a Duck Hunt box. That's a really good one to look at. So that is just somebody sitting there with, you know, probably a pair of scissors, graph paper, whatever they used, gluing that down onto a background. And then those little speed lines kind of coming off from Mario, those might be the only paint that is there. That is mostly construction paper.
So they do that with the silver boxes too? Like, because that was kind of the same era. Okay.
Yeah, black boxes. So your Kid Icarus would be like a craft project.
Okay. And see, it's funny. I kind of downplayed it, right? I was like, well, it's just a screenshot, right? I had no clue that there was actually some work involved into it.
They didn't really have good screen grab technology like that to be able to put something on a box at that time.
Good point.
So they would have had to do something like this.
Man, now, you know, I regret.
Archon was the same way. Like, that black and white Archon box was Dave McMacken was the artist. It was just black and white cut paper. And, you know, he said that it wasn't holding up well, so he threw it out. Shame.
That is really fascinating. I had no idea about that on the black box. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, they'd, I always thought that was, that blew my mind when I found out too. Like when I sort of, read, actually it was somebody else that had figured that out. And when I read about that and then grabbed the black boxes and looked and saw the cut lines and the shadows, that blew my freaking mind. So yeah, it's neat because we've all looked at those boxes. How many times? Like how many times? And it's never sunk in what we were looking at.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I saw somebody posted about that somewhere and I had seen and I was like, my mind, it blew.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. Is there any other oddities that you've seen out there that are outside of the painting mediums like that? That's definitely an oddity.
Yeah. So clay sculptures. So think about something like Plock for SNES. You know, that is a photograph. So an artist kind of made a 3D clay or a series of 3D clay sculptures, kind of arranged them in a certain way, set up his camera, and then took a photo of the clay. So the artwork for that is like statues, like little maquettes or whatever you want to call them, the three-dimensional objects that were then photographed. NBA Jam, you know, a collector owns, you know, the ball, which wasn't, if I recall correctly, it's not sort of a real basketball. It's, I don't know what you'd call it. I guess a statue is not the right word, but a three-dimensional kind of artwork of a ball that was placed onto the box as well. So, you know, that kind of, so there's three-dimensional stuff, there's comic book style stuff, there's painted stuff, there's cut paper, you know, there's photographs, obviously. What else?
There was a one I found pretty interesting from, I think it was Greg Winters that did it, the Gargoyle's Quest for Game Boy. There was that ad out there, and I had seen that back in the day with the kid playing the Game Boy, and I think he just painted the gargoyle and all that on the ad over top of the picture. So
Over top of a photo, exactly. So there was a photo of a kid holding a Game Boy or something, you're right, and then he painted the gargoyle coming out of it. So that was kind of a blend between a photo and a painting. Another one, I guess, is Sonic Spinball for Game Gear. So if you look at the two Sonic Spinballs between Genesis and Game Gear, they're a little different, right? Like in the Genesis version, he's got kind of a more natural looking mustache, and the Game Gear, he's got the kind of shock of mustache that goes straight out. So there's some kind of changes made in the way they wanted Eggman to look between the two versions. And so the one is a photo kind of painted over top, like you're talking about. So that's not the, your example that you gave has happened in other places. You know, and things like RoboCop, I mean, that was pulled from the movie poster, but that was also a photograph that was kind of painted over and whatever. Like that happens sometimes. That is a technique.
Yeah, that's
kind of using that as instead of like drawing and then painting on top of it, starting with a photo and then painting on top of it to give the same kind of underdrawing effect.
Yeah, that's interesting because I recently have found that out with a few paintings. I can't remember off the top of my head the artist, but the one that had all the horror paintings that were book related that were in the
Lee McLeod.
Yeah. So he had done that on a few of those paintings, and I had never known that was a thing. Like take a picture and then paint over the picture. But they look so real. So
yeah. No, they really do. Yeah, no, he's a wonderful artist. He was Greg Martin's best friend. We're hoping to have him on the podcast in a little while. He did all the Ultima, a lot of the Ultima stuff.
Nice.
For the NES and SNES, I should say, not the PC.
Yeah, he did some great work. I have a Lee McLeod piece around here somewhere, the Sega Sports Baseball Pocket Arcade one. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Via me indirectly. Yeah.
Okay. That was you that submitted that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a nice piece in person. I mean, it looks really nice. I'm sure if it was hockey, you would have kept it though.
I guess. Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess I'd have to see it, right? It would depend.
Yeah.
You know, definitely it was if it was a Vancouver Canucks piece, that'd stay here.
So I guess, and you'd probably be a better one to explain this, but you want to talk a little bit about like the stages that they go through in the art production process? Because somebody comes in and says, hey, I want a piece. There's a process and sometimes multiple pieces of art that get generated before you get to a final product. You want to talk through that a little bit, Dan?
Yeah. So there was a bit of a process, and you can imagine, you know, a client's paying good money to have this done. They want to be happy with what they're going to get. So, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to show your client 3, 4, 5 different alternatives. So you just little drawings, just rough, but just to give the idea, like maybe we'll have, you know, Mega Man, you know, fighting this boss on the cover. You know, maybe we'll have an underwater scene like a Mega Man X, like just 3, 4, 5 different layouts of what the scene could be. And then they would choose one, they would approve one as a concept, and then they would, you know, blow that up into the painting. So, you know, for example, like here's a couple of the different drawings that went into the creation of Panic Restaurant. So he's a little angrier on this one. I don't know how well you guys could see that. He's a little angrier there.
I'd imagine they're little, like, don't scare the children. You need to.
Yeah, exactly. So they softened it into like a more of a
comical kind of like.
Yeah, more. Thank you. Yes, that's right. So they subdued the expression a little bit and then approved that and kind of went ahead with it. And there's an old Polaroid of it kind of in process. You know, so this is February 22 of. I guess we could look up what year that is, probably 93, Monday, midnight. So he's working on this late at night. The artist gave me that Polaroid. And so he did the figure first, and then he did all the background later. So there'd be pencil preliminaries like this, right? And one of them would be approved. There might be like a color study or like a color preliminary done to kind of map out the colors, kind of decide what the color scheme is going to be. That was sometimes done, sometimes not. And then from there, basically, they would go ahead and create the painting. I've already shown one of those, and Steve's got one of those in the background. And once that's done, you'd film it. So I don't know if you guys can see. Can you guys see that or not?
Kind of.
It's very reflective, but.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have a light behind it.
It doesn't have a light behind it, and there's multiple layers of plastic. Anyway, it's a little Samson film.
Oh,
so man, they would take a photo of the painting, put it onto film like this, and now you've got a film that you can use to actually create the box. Because at the end of the day, you know, you can't do anything with the painting. You've got to shrink it down and put it onto a format that is suitable for mass production. So from there, you know, there'd be one for the main image, but there'd also be different films like that for all like the little screenshots on the back and the logos and everything. And it would be kind of combined into one image, and the printer goes for it.
That's pretty interesting. And one of the things I've realized along this process, so sometimes the sketches are really, really like a rough sketch. So they don't look very final. They're just like getting some ideas jotted down on paper. So there's a wide variety, and there's also a difference in value depending on, I mean, of course, the title matters, the artist matters, but like a rough sketch is going to sell for less than like a more final sketch. So I did pull one final sketch out because I know this one you probably like a little bit there, Dan.
There you go.
If only I knew who had the final painting somewhere. This is the preliminary sketch. It looks pretty final as far as Sonic Triple Trouble goes. So, and this is Greg Martin. So the pencil lines are actually really nice. Not all artists made like a super detailed final. It may have been like a little bit of details, but I really, really enjoy this one and being a big Sonic fan. I actually got this game as a kid for, I think it was for Christmas. So I remember playing this in a lot of road trips, beating it like 800 times. So definitely one. Happy to have.
Did you buy that from Sanford or did you buy that from me or where did you get that?
I got that from Adam.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Cool.
So I got a question. Like, and so I'm more of a collector video game wise, but you know, we have eBay comps and we have price charting and stuff, but what do you have to kind of gauge what something is worth?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, there is over the past 2, 3, 4, I would say about 4 years, there have been pieces that have kind of come onto Heritage and been sold that way. So there are kind of direct public sale comps. Given that I've been doing it a long time, I also know about a lot of private sale comps that, you know, don't necessarily, you know, hit Heritage or whatever, but have happened. I know who's sold it and who's bought it and what it's gone for. So, you know, some of it is just, you know, private. And then some of it is, you know, there are pretty good comparables for. So, It really depends. You know, valuation is always a question. There's a lot that goes into that. And at first, you know, Rom, you're probably wondering, like, I don't know if something's worth, you know, $100 or $100,000. And I felt the exact same way when I started out. Like, I would see, actually, not so much when I started out with game art, but when I first started tracking comic art, which I started tracking before I did game art. I would see like a cover to like a $2 comic book sell for like $50,000. And like, I didn't get it. And then I'd see, you know, maybe a cover for like a $500 comic book sell for the same $50,000. And like, it wasn't just kind of a multiple of what the comic book is worth. There was other things that went into it, you know, and now I know that that's, you know, the artist, the image, you know, the characters, like, are you, if it's Wolverine, are the claws out? Are you looking at the character's butt or is the character facing, you know, the cover the way you'd want it to? Like, there's all these things that go into it and it's second nature now. But yeah, you know, when you start, it's a bit of a learning curve, you know, and so that's where talking to other collectors and kind of doing some research by looking at the public comps that are available helps.
Yeah, and if you're wondering what kind of price range that art is in, I mean, you could get like something entry level. What would you say, Dan? Like an entry level preliminary sketch or something. You could probably get something in a couple $100 range,
and then
it goes up. Yeah, it goes up from there. So there's a lot of factors at play. I'm finally starting to get a good feel for this, and it's been a couple years, but you know, I'm still always wondering on other things. I find a new curveball, like, hey, this wasn't published, but it's a cool image, or hey, it's a famous artist, so where does this fit in? Or maybe it's an alternate. So there's all these different things you run into as you go along. And just to show another quick example, just while we're talking about the different processes. So with the color comps, I've noticed too, if they did a color comp, I've seen, like, I have a couple of them, and some of them are like slapping a piece of, you know, a very rough sketch and like a paintbrush just slapped on there just to see what the color looks mm-hmm. like. It's not painted in the lines. I mean, I'm pretty sure my kid paints in the lines more than some of these.
Yeah.
But other times they actually do a really nice job. And so, I think Dan already knows I have this piece, but when it came full circle for me, it was Mike Winterbauer was the first one that clued me into, the fact that video game art was a thing. This is the color comp for Wing Commander for Super Nintendo, and it's a super clean. And once it got framed, it really looks nice, almost complete like the original painting would be. But this is not the painting. This is all – looks like it's all hand-penciled with color pencils. So you can get variant stages, and, of course, the value goes up. The final is, you know, unless it's comic book style, would be the ink lines would be the final. But, you know, each one's a fraction of a value of the final. And
yeah, like the, you know, the piece everybody sort of wants is the final published painting, because there's one of those. And that's the image on the box. That's kind of, that's the big home run kind of money shot piece. But you can get preliminaries for 5%, 10%, is a good kind of guide, maybe 20%, some exceptional circumstances of what the finished piece would go for. And, so, you know, that could be a more kind of budget friendly way to collect too, where you're spending a few $100, or maybe, at the most, a couple thousand, to get something that's still cool, still historical, still one of a kind, but, is more friendly on the wallet. The finished pieces too. I mean, if it's, a 3DO title that, has got a crappy image, it's not going to go for very much money, even if it's the final box. Everybody is going to want the same stuff for the most part. You know, the big splashy NES, SNES, Genesis titles are going to go for big money, because when you boil it down, like if you try and write down a list of what those big splashy titles are, there aren't that many of them. And there's only one final painting like that for each of those. And a lot of the times they don't exist, they're owned by the company, or maybe they were done in Japan, maybe the box is a photo, maybe the box is a logo. Like there's, when you filter it all down, there's very few to go around. Like there's really only about 100, little less than 100 known final NES paintings out there to date. And there's about the same number of SNES. And then Genesis, I guess, depending on whether you double count the images that were used for SNES and Genesis. So, long story short, there's very, very few of them, very, very few of them. And that's all of them. And now, if you want the one that everybody wants, that's where the prices get big.
So yeah, you're telling me that I'm not going to be able to find an original box out for Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, you're not.
I was just eBaying that, or like looking right now. I'm like, oh man, I wonder what that's worth.
Yeah, no, that would be huge money. That that artist, Akira Toriyama. If you go on to Mandarake, that's this Japanese kind of toy website that's also sold Japanese art in the past. Just his little unpublished sketches for things like, I forget his manga titles, like not Dr. Slump, but some of the other ones. Like those have gone for $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, like just little unpublished sketches. So he's apparently, a hermit and hard to get anything from whatsoever, and so on and so forth. But no, you're not going to get Chrono Trigger. And if you did, it'd be, that would be huge money. That'd be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And furthermore, it's owned by Squaresoft. Like for the 2008 re-release of Chrono Trigger on the Nintendo DS, those pieces were brought out by Squaresoft and they were exhibited in Tokyo at the time. So there are photos on the internet of those originals. So of the Chrono Trigger box, the back of the box, the various scenes that were done, kind of conceptually to flesh out the game. And so, 20, 30 of those paintings, including the main box art for Chrono Trigger, were displayed and are still owned by I guess it's Square Enix now and not Squaresoft, but those are in Tokyo and owned by the company. So you're not, good luck.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance. That's right. That's a classic movie. Yeah.
Yeah. There are paintings that have sold out there in the six figure range. And I'm sure there's a number of iconic ones. If they ever were to hit the market, I'm sure they would be six figure paintings. It would take a lot to probably hit a seven figure on something like this, I think, at this point in time. But if the right one came out, I think you could do it. Like something like – it had to be something iconic, though. And it's got to really have something that's going to bring that value.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if, you know, you had Mario 3 for sale, then and it got all over the news articles and whatever, then maybe that would draw in people that wouldn't normally kind of be in this sphere to want to bid on that, and then who knows. But for the most part, yeah, that's not going to happen right now, just based on the buyer pool.
That actually kind of brings up a good topic is, so like comic book art you mentioned before, like $50,000 for the $2 title, $50,000 for the $500 title. How do you think the comic book art markets kind of compare with video game markets right now?
I mean, all these different markets, like comic book art, movie poster art, you know, wacky pack art, because all of those, like the wacky pack trading cards, all had paintings associated with them, right? And there's a good market for those, garbage pail kid art. Yeah. All these kind of different, you know, pop culture segments that have artwork attached to them, they're all their own thing. It's hard to make direct comparisons to it, but certainly, like, comic art has just been around a lot longer and, you know, is a lot more developed. So for the most part, it's just a much bigger, deeper, wider market. But, you know, it's funny, like, if you go into Heritage and you filter for what's the most expensive thing ever sold in the comic book category, and that includes video games, the comic book category, the most expensive thing ever sold on Heritage was a Frank Frazetta painting, who you may or may not have heard of. He's an artist that did a little bit of work at comics, but also a lot of like paperback covers and things. And that was $6 million. And that was used on a Molly Hatchet album in the 70s. So technically, you know, it's an album cover that is the most expensive thing that's ever sold on Heritage in the comic section. That was just recent. That was within the last, I don't know, a year or two or something.
Yeah, I remember that piece going up for auction. I don't think it was maybe a year ago. I don't think it was super long, and they were hyping it up big time.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jim Halpern, that, you know, is one of the owners of Heritage, is a big fan of Frazetta, from what I understand. And he leaves his collection online publicly, actually. You can look it up. He's got lots of artwork from Frazetta, from 1950s EC comics, different things. He's a big collector himself.
Yeah, I've noticed, like, a lot of the science fiction artists, especially those – maybe in that era when they were doing video game box art, a lot of them I've seen mentions on their websites of influence by Frazetta, or they have Frazetta-like paintings that they've done as a tribute to him. He seemed to be an icon for a lot of these artists.
So many. So, Bill, Rom, you may not be familiar with the Frazetta painting called The Norseman, but maybe after this conversation, or, you know, if you got it in front of you, Google it. Frank Frazetta, The Norseman. And, you know, tell me what you see. You may see a pose that looks a little familiar to you. And I'm curious to see if you guys can kind of put it together as to where you might have seen that, where else you might have seen that.
I think they're both Googling it right now. I can see.
Yeah, them. I know. I'm putting them on the spot. I'll save you some time.
I got it, Rom.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It kind of reminds me of a couple things. I don't know why.
Really?
Wizards and Warriors comes to mind a little bit, but it's almost like
Bill, Conan. It sounds like you got it.
Oh, instantly. The original Castlevania on NES.
100%. That's it.
See, that's your angle right there.
That was on an unfair advantage. He's the Mega Man guy. I'm the Castlevania guy. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a 70s painting, and way before Castlevania. And he's, as Steve was saying, Frazetta's, you know, really influential. Tons of artists have looked to him and kind of copied his stuff and whatever. And yeah, the Japanese artists were looking at Frazetta, you know, when they created that iconic Castlevania cover. Like, that's one of the most beautiful NES boxes there is. And, you know, it kind of cracks me up sometimes when, like there's this thing out there where some segment of the collecting community thinks that like Japanese art is automatically better, which, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But the funny thing is sometimes the Japanese art is aping Western art and the people that are criticizing it don't even realize it. So anyways, I thought you guys would enjoy that as an example of something that Frazetta influenced. There's also, you know, there's a great website called, I think it's called Tracing the Influence, that shows a bunch of like retro game boxes that you might be familiar with and where some of the images and poses and stuff were kind of taken from. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. What are you getting at there, Ron?
This is the Famicom Disk System Legend of Zelda.
Right.
Yeah. So you're saying that, like I think that's what a lot of people see. And I'm sorry, kind of going back to about 30 seconds ago, but I think this
Gotcha, with the Japanese art.
Yeah, this is what people, they look at the more popular thing and like, oh man, it's so much better. So, yeah. And I'm guilty of it too. I'm just like, I look at that, I'm like, oh, far, much better. I mean, I've got the Kid Icarus and Metroid and everything over here for the Famicom Disk System. It's just like, I feel there's so much more care taken into art on the Japanese side of things.
There's some of that, and you know, I think part of it is it just all looks fresh to Western eyes, you know? Like,
it's a good point.
Because a lot of their stuff, like, they've got some, you know, like, I think one of the criticisms is like the Western stuff uses these sort of visual tropes. It's kind of the same thing repeated. Japanese stuff does that too, but we just don't see it as often. So it looks fresh to us. It's like, hold, but to your point, there are some really wonderful kind of images that came out of Japan for sure. No doubt. I was mentioning Tracing the Influence. Yeah.
Right.
If anybody's interested, check that website out. It's got a lot of cool instances of, you know, where Frazetta art was used in different box covers, where Boris Vallejo stuff was used, where, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of this, Steve, that, you know, the Contra cover looks like Schwarzenegger and Stallone. Mm-hmm. And that's a common misconception. But if you look at that website, it'll prove to you that it's actually Schwarzenegger and Schwarzenegger. It's two different stills of Schwarzenegger from Predator.
Ah.
I knew there was a tie to Predator for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got the exact like moment in the film kind of frozen where you see both of those poses. Or the two moments.
That's interesting. And you mentioned the Japanese art, just kind of touching on that a minute. I found that there's some Japanese art to me that's like awesome looking, and some of it just kind of looks kind of silly to me. Because I'm not a big fan.
Like, Rom, what are your thoughts on the Rockman stuff? Like, I don't really care for it.
It's more.
Maybe we're gonna. I hope I'm not starting a fight.
No, you're good, man. No, I like them all. I mean, I've got them all. It's more consistent, I think, on the Japanese side. Watching your YouTube video about how the Mega Man 1 art came to be, it makes sense now. But to me, it's just the consistency of it. And I like them all.
They're very consistent, but I never found they drew me in. Like, you know, to Bill's point about what makes a good piece of box art, like, does it draw you in? Does it excite you? Is it fun to look at? Like, I just kind of felt like it was kind of, yeah, they're the characters. It's kind of generic. Eh?
Yeah, I think 4 was the one that really drew me in. I played the other ones, but 4 was the one that I actually sat down and I beat first. And then
are we talking about the Western or the Japanese now?
Well, sorry, you're talking about drawing in the U.S. Version.
Yeah, okay.
But see, I didn't really touch the Famicom stuff until 3-4 years ago, so it doesn't hit me as much as 1-6 for the NES. So you know, maybe as a kid, it might have done something different to me, but already had that misconception in my head about the U.S. artwork. So might not be a fair assessment. And you're right. Like going back to you saying just the fresh eyes, like you haven't seen something like that before. To me, honestly, it's not the art. It's the cartridge colors and stuff. It's just not boring like the NES stuff. So, and immediately I don't even have to look at the artwork and I'm like, oh, this is already cooler. So it's probably an unfair assessment and you have a point, right? You've got a point when it comes to, just the different styles.
No, I think maybe what you're trying to say, let me know if this is right, is just that, you know, freshness, novelty kind of plays a factor.
Yeah. I mean, you brought it up perfectly, because we're not used to it. I mean, I went to Japan a few months ago and just was in awe of everything. And just
that must have been fun. I'd love to go.
It was amazing. And it was just the amount of care they put into everything. And it shows it, and you're looking at how they preserve this type of stuff, you know, and it just, maybe I'm just drawn to it more too, you know, but it was amazing.
So going on that experience too may tie you to it a little bit, seeing all that and having it brings you back a little bit of memories from your trip.
For sure, for sure.
So also, like, even one thing I've noticed is even if you go to like European art, so you had the PAL boxes. I mean, sometimes they would be the same as the American one, or other times they would use artists overseas. So they had a little bit of different variety as well in their styles. And I pulled one more out, but also to illustrate, like, not all box arts are huge. This one is Marsupilami for Sega Genesis. It was the same over in Europe. But this character was from Spirou and Fantasio, I think it was, in Spirou magazine, which is was hugely popular overseas, and Marsupilami was a character out of it. But in the States, nobody probably had any idea who Marsupilami is. And this is was made by a French artist, so this was made overseas. So it's a little more watercolor. I don't know. It could maybe be mistaken for a U.S. box art, but it's not as like edgy and stuff, I feel like, as you would find over here in North America.
Yeah. It's, you know, and I grew up, or I was born in Europe. So I grew up on like Asterix and Obelix and stuff like that. So it's along those lines, you know, that whole tradition of European comics. It's very different than the American stuff.
Yeah. So one of the things that we didn't touch on yet is, when you are getting into art collecting, there are not only, you know, different stages of the art production, but there's different ways they get published. So we talked a lot about box art today, but there's other areas that you can find paintings, and collectors kind of value them differently. Again, like, image matters a lot. If you think it looks cool, somebody else is probably going to think it looks cool. So, you know, as well as who did the art and whatnot. But, you know, you look at like Nintendo Powers. There were poster inserts. There were covers to those. There was all sorts of gaming magazines with advertisements with the art coming up. And a lot of times there was additional art outside of the box art that was produced for those. That you also have out there some alternate paintings, which may look like a final painting, but they were maybe didn't make the cut for the cover art. I have one of those tucked away over here for Dune for Sega CD. So it's a very nice finished looking painting, but it's
two of those. You have two of those because I know I sold you one.
Dune?
No, besides Dune.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do. I have another one. I have the Greg Martin Slider alternate artwork for Game Gear, and that is a beautiful painting because it was also the first Greg Martin painting I owned. I think it's the only one I own, actually, but it's got really nice colors on it, and it's a little more cartoony, which fit Greg's style. And then the other Greg Winters, which it always amazes me how many Gregs there are in the art world, like where they competition with each other. But he went with a much more edgy style, a little less cartoony, and I think I actually prefer the Greg Martin version, the one you sold me, Dan. That's a really cool piece.
I prefer it 100%. It's just not the one that got published, but it looks much better, I find, as well. I just think that for whatever reason, the client must have wanted it to look a little more, but it was like not a good decision, I didn't think.
Yeah, I think it would have sold better actually with the other cover, because I don't remember that game back in the day, and it just kind of looked a little weird and gritty.
Yeah.
It's still a cool piece, but it's just different.
Yeah.
But
yeah, totally agree. Yeah. So, you know, Steve, I want to ask you, like, what are, or, you know, Bill or Rom, if you have anything you want to jump in about, but I'm curious as to, you know, here you are, you've been collecting a couple of years, you've started to kind of, be familiar with some of the different artists. And by the way, on originalvideogameart.com, there's a bunch of artist biographies and kind of listings of what pieces they've worked on. So, you know, if you're interested in any of the names that we've kind of talked about today over the course of this little chat, you know, you can head over there. You can kind of look up and ask and find out, okay, you know, they were talking about Tom Du Bois. You know, what boxes did he do exactly? A lot of that information is available there. So, you know, Steve, is there like one artist that, you know, kind of stands out to you that, you know, you've become interested in, or maybe you didn't like at first that you like now, or vice versa? Like, is there anything that's kind of surprised you along the way?
I don't know if I would say any big surprises, but there's a couple artists that I really like or would like to own one of their pieces, although the prices are pretty expensive. So like owning I feel like Julie Bell or Boris Vallejo, is that how you say last name?
Yeah, okay. I believe so.
I read these things and in my head I pronounce them, so hopefully I'm getting them kind of right.
Yeah.
So I love their work. I would love to own one of their pieces at some point in time. I've really come to enjoy their style. I know there's a little bit of like it's always like it feels like bodybuilding and stuff, which I believe they were into that back in the day, weren't they?
Yeah, they sure were. Yeah. They both, Julie actually, you know, lovely lady, nice, super nice woman. And you know, there's pictures of her from, you know, when she competed in weightlifting, competitions and whatever at the time. And she was ripped, you know, and she's a, you know, beautiful lady. And, Boris too, you know, was really into that lifestyle. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit on our podcast episode about Boris and Julie, but I think during kind of the gaming years, you know, maybe they went a little too far with kind of indulging the that look in their artwork. This is just my opinion, but you know, they did great work before, great work after, and but yeah, to really long-windedly answer your question, yes, they were both very much into that, and it did come up in their artwork.
Yeah. And actually, so one of the pieces that I saw early on is the Legacy of Kain Blood Omen piece for the original PlayStation. And when I saw that piece, that was one of the ones.
Where would you see such a thing, Steve?
Heritage Auctions is where I saw it.
Oh, that's right. Because I own that.
Yeah.
Steve's in the process of buying it from me.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you brought that up, I thought you were going to say that you saw it from me, but yeah, you saw where I bought it.
Yeah. So you don't realize. So like that whole series, I played every game in the series, and, my favorite was the Soul Reaver entries of that game, but those were all digital art. So I stumbled upon, you know, when I knew there was art and then I realized you could buy it, I looked on Heritage and I said, huh, let me type in Legacy of Kain, or I typed in Soul Reaver or something. And the art piece popped up and I'm like, wow, somebody owns that out there. I never knew I would figure out who actually owned it. That like blew my mind, first of all. But I absolutely love the style of the artist Gary Riddell on that. And I actually even emailed him at one point, super nice guy to talk to. And I was asking him about it. And he told me that basically most of the game companies didn't return the art to him. So I think a lot of the art that's floating out there for the few game pieces he did do over the years probably maybe came from different avenues. I don't know how it popped up on Heritage, but that was my understanding from talking to him. And his style is cool, especially on all those paperback books and stuff he did and illustration. Even did Playboy magazine. He did a bunch of paintings. Still got a lot of that kind of stuff.
You have my interest.
Yeah, he did a bunch of it. He still has a lot of the old illustration art too. It's just not, you know, video game stuff. So great guy to talk to if you want some of those paintings, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kidding more mostly, but yeah, super talented guy, totally. He didn't do a ton of game art. I think there was maybe 7 or 10 kind of pieces that he did, but talented illustrator for sure. Like at the end of the day, what's that saying? Is it the Pareto principle where, you know, 90% of, like 90% of the art is done by 10% of the artist kind of thing. Like that principle applied to game art. That's true. Like at the end of the day, there were a few names that did a lot of it and then a whole bunch of names that did a little bit. So there are guys like Greg Winters that did 100 pieces, and there's a few guys like that, but then there's a whole bunch of guys that did 2, 3, 4, 1, 3, 1, 2, you know? So there's a lot of artists out there that worked on game art, but the big names are a much smaller number.
I find it's hard to find artists nowadays because, I mean, there's already people out there that have been looking for a lot of years like yourself. There's a number of people on the collecting communities that have really cool pieces that they've found over the years. And just finding those people that did one or two pieces and figuring out their name or like sometimes they do a completely different art style. They may be retired. I mean, that was a long time ago, 20, 30 years ago. So
they
finding
may be
these
passed
things,
away. They yeah. may not have it in their possession. It might have been kept by the company. All that kind of stuff. I mean, Steve, share with me again how many, like you started out reaching to some artists you told me. How many guys did you contact and what did you get out of those contacts?
I have reached out to, actually I have a list so I don't double up on any of these. It's that long. Let me see. About 110, and I have gotten probably one piece out of that.
Yeah,
inconsequential piece. Well, it's a really cool piece, but it's just it was development art for an online game, Warhammer.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love having new collectors, and I love the energy. But in terms of like the obvious stuff, like the box arts for the well-known games. I mean, we've been chipping away at that for a lot of years, like you said, and those have been, you know, those bushes have been beaten pretty hard. So it's hard to find a lot sort of new, but what has happened, and I think what will continue to happen over time is that the hobby is going to go in new directions because as new people come on and, there isn't necessarily like enough, you know, contra paintings to go around and stuff like that. People like Stefan Rees started going into Nintendo Power Art and he managed to find a bunch of that. Someone managed to kind of veer into Japanese a little more. You know, there's magazine art that's been like, you know, you were saying the gaming magazines that had, you know, paintings on the covers and inside and whatever. So paintings or magazines outside of Nintendo Power, things like concept art. So, you know, if you look at Heritage's, list of upcoming auctions, I think in May, there's a concept art auction for Knights of the Republic, the Star Wars BioWare title. And so there's going to be a little auction there of that material. And so that's in-game art now, not to do with the packaging. And so essentially, you know, it's just it's going to have to spread into different niches and directions to keep kind of growing and evolving and for people to, you know, have opportunities to kind of find something, you know, cool on their own without necessarily, if they don't have, you know, X thousands and thousands of dollars to drop on something that they really like when they see it available publicly.
Yeah. And just to clarify too, like I've found a couple pieces, but sometimes the prices are really high and, or they're inconsequential, or they may not be very consequential for what they want for the piece. So there are pieces out there in those inquiries I've put out there, but, you know, I don't know. It's kind of a balancing game.
Tell me something you've passed on. Like, why don't you share something you've passed on?
I was looking at, I can't remember the artist's name, but it was some, it was like an obscure PC game cover art, and they wanted like $9,000 for it. I can't remember the name of the title because it was a really weird name. It was a cool piece, so it had a cool factor to it. But yeah. I don't think I wanted to spend $9,000 on an unknown game.
That's totally understandable. Yeah, you know, because at the end of the day, like, you know, artists are people. For the most part, they're not collectors or whatever. And the value to the pieces is starting to be a little better known now as to, you know, what's valuable and what's not. But for the most part, you know, either it was just taking up space and they're happy to get rid of it, or for, you know, sometimes not that much money, or they really valued it, saw it as part of their legacy, and wanted a lot of money. And oftentimes there wasn't a lot of in between, right? So sometimes, you know, you might get something that as a collector you thought was a really good value, or something that just didn't make sense to buy, like you came across.
Yeah, I'd love to own Stephen Perringer. Still has that, I think it was one of the R-Type paintings. That's pretty pricey. Although I think the price may be fair because that's a pretty iconic artwork, but I can't see myself spending that much money.
Right.
There's some interesting pieces out there still. But I mean,
Bill, Steve. Yeah. I'm just curious. You know, Bill, if you could have, you know, kind of any piece, you know, but you. Well, I guess I mean, if it's free, that's too easy. Like, if you were going to consider picking something up, Bill or Rom, like, what is something that, you know, you might kind of lean towards? Like, I know this world's new to you and whatever. I'm just curious. I'm just trying to, you know, kind of engage you guys in the conversation a little bit too, so it's not just me and Steve kind of nerding out. But I'm curious as to your thoughts on some of that.
Yeah. No, and I love listening to you guys talk. This is all really fascinating to me, and I'm learning stuff. And I think it's interesting, real quick too, before I go into answering your question, that PS1 N64 era, I feel like that was kind of a cutoff point where a lot of stuff went digital.
Very perceptive. Yes.
And so, you know, Steve saying that you were able to find like Legacy of Kain games or whatever, and then that Superman 64 is, you know, kind of got good art, you know, and so I found that very interesting. And that, you know, just the 90s and all the colors, you know, something that I would try to seek out, though, I think it would have to be, you know, something with a lot of that you can definitely tell is a painting, if that makes sense. You know, like it's unmistakably a painting.
That's what you like about Du Bois, I think.
Right.
Because like with him, like, you can see the brush strokes. It's obvious that it's handmade. It's not airbrush.
Yeah. And even something like Top Gun, the second mission. If you sit and look at that cover for a while, there is so much detail and depth and colors. And you can just tell like the airplane's going down and it's in a spiral and there's missiles going off with, you know, heat behind it and details. It's just crazy to me. And it's just, you know, it's unmistakably a painting. And like, or something like Bloodlines, how all the different colors, the bright, the pinks, the oranges, the greens, you know, all these different colors that kind of just blend. And so something like that is what I would be drawn to for sure.
Good answer. Yeah. Love Du Bois. Starting to get used to saying his name that way, but it still feels a little strange.
It's feeling a little weird to me, but.
So,
yeah,
I'll chime in because I've never thought of it. And so y'all are talking and I'm like, oh man, what would I love to have? Honestly, something from the SNES era, like Squaresoft or Enix, like Illusion of Gaia. like their original art cell or Secret of Mana, or even Secret that would of Evermore. Cheap. Yeah, see, that's my problem. It's like all the stuff. I'm like, there's no way in heck I'll ever be able to get stuff like that. But yeah, stuff like even Mario RPG, something.
I do have Evermore.
Oh man, such an underrated game. Like not like, kind of went under the radar for a lot of people.
Well, start saving and be really nice to Dan.
All right, got it.
Yeah. The artist, Dave McMacken, who we talked about previously, who had done that Archon cut paper piece, found him many years ago, and he had it on his website, kind of available as one of his illustrations for sale, and he called it Crab Attack on his website. You know, I always kind of chuckle about that because, you know, fuck, like Secret of Evermore means nothing to him, right? I mean, at the end of the day, he, you know, he illustrated it, but he didn't have any particular connection to the game, didn't really, you know, didn't play it or anything. And so, you know, 20 years later, when he's uploading it on his website, you know, who knows if he remembered what it was for? He called it Crab Attack. You know, it just it's funny the different perspective they had on it.
Yeah,
I looked at that and I was like, "That's not a crab. That's Secret of Evermore."
Get it now.
I'll take that one. Yeah,
I'm looking at it right now on Heritage Auctions. They have the Gex front cover.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the pieces coming up. Yeah,
but why?
There's not, also Ghoul Patrol.
I saw that one.
Ghoul Patrol is another good one.
So what's the reasoning behind not having the title on it? Is it just this is what he presented and gave it to the company and then they slapped the logo on? Or?
That's a great question.
That is a great question. The overwhelming majority of the original pieces don't have the logo on it. I think it just there's a few that do, but for the most part they don't. Okay. I think it just gave them greater flexibility to be able to move the logo around and get it where they wanted and get all the elements around if that was a separate painting,
right?
And those logos are separate paintings, mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because it's the long box too, because it came out on 3DO and Saturn, and was it big box PlayStation? So
long box PlayStation. So
okay, that makes sense.
So the Gex title would be a separate illustration on a separate piece of illustration board. Like a totally different painting. And there is a market for those too. You know, it's not the same as the market for the actual cover art. You know, I've had a few of them, but they're surprisingly hard to find. They're actually harder to find than the actual, you know, main images, I think, because it just, you know, they weren't the main images, so they weren't really kept and whatever. And, you know, to me, they aren't really that exciting either. Like, they're cool, but yeah, they're not really what I want. I don't want three letters that say Gex. I want the big image with the, you know, the character and the background and everything.
Yeah, man. I'm going through a lot of this stuff. I just found the Rogue Squadron one, which is really cool looking. Now, Steve, you glossed past something real quick, and I got to get back to you. You said an online Warhammer game. So you have something from Warhammer Age of Reckoning?
I do.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna.
You want to see it? I'll show it to you.
Have it,
let's see it, Steve. Let's see it.
I freaking love that game.
Yeah, so I think it actually was – I found a final image of this. So it was concept art that it was hired out. It was Ralph Horsley. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. But he's done a bit of art for that sector as well as other. And he's a really talented guy. And I just really like this stuff. So I messaged him one day and – he said, yeah, I did two paintings. He had one left for Electronic Arts, hired him to do it as a concept. And I found a kind of finished image online with a logo and stuff. And it had some of the items in the image blanked out. And I think that was like the stuff that didn't make the cut. But given that there is a kind of final image, it must have been used somewhere, or wallpaper or something. So, yeah, I'll grab it real quick. You guys can chat while I'm grabbing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, this isn't good for wallets, man. Just looking at some,
what's
this
that
isn't good for wallets, looking at some of this stuff now. I mean I've never thought, but then, you know, we're talking about art and then I'm looking at behind me and I have this white space all right here. I had that Mega Man deal, but that's it. So I need more Any more stuff
you
on
need
the wall?
Something there. There you go. Yeah. What Mega Man have you got behind you? I can't really
it's
see.
Just someone got it for me. For, it's like a Secret Santa thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and he framed it and everything for me. It's awesome.
All right, I'm going to take this out of the plastic because it's super shiny, this bag it was put into. And the other thing I thought was really cool is he actually had the original invoice that he worked on with this. He also threw in like a bunch of little prints and signed them and stuff, which was kind of a nice touch you know.
It's always nice when you get some free swag.
Yeah, he wrote a little letter and stuff.
Yeah, because a lot of these people, you know, they're like, this random guy appreciates what I'm doing. And, you know, they're kind of unsung heroes of, that is so cool.
I don't know if I showed you this piece, Dan.
You did.
I just got it recently. I did. Okay,
yeah, you did. You did. Yeah. Cool. Oh,
man. Yeah. That's so very cool. I really like it because I don't know if you can tell on the camera, but all these pieces are very actually intricately painted for being just a random staff.
So they're all staffs, no hammer?
Yeah, he was hired to do this, and there was one character that actually was pretty cool, but he sold that a long time ago, he said. I was probably like the one random person that asked something like this, or maybe it didn't. Maybe somebody else was looking for something else.
Did he say what character it was?
I have a picture of it. I can show you. Cool.
Yeah, I played that, and then everything. All the servers went down. It was sad.
So, on a side note, Rom and Bill, I just dropped the other image in the chat.
Okay, cool. That is very.
I don't know what the character is.
Me neither. Yeah, I haven't seen that.
So these are like concepts. So they would have taken those images and then used them to create the 3D, you know, image in the game itself.
It almost looks like a squig herder, but which I don't know if y'all know Warhammer at all, but it was I can't even describe it. That's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know Warhammer at all. I remember buying the PS1 Horned Rat title. And just feeling like, you know, the SSI. What's that? Isn't it Warhammer Legacy of the Horned Rat or something?
Or is that
for PS1? Or is that
SSI?
No, it's SSI. It's SSI. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong thing. Anyway, that was one of those titles where you know you feel ripped off because to what you were saying earlier, Rom, it's one of those where you get duped by the cool art and you play the game and you're like, what is this steaming piece of shit?
See, I'm not the only one that calls it a steaming pile here, guys.
Yeah.
They made a comment on the first one. Like, maybe it wasn't y'all, but somebody, they're like, you said steaming pile of crap like four times.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to piss off Steve now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to get Steve. Everybody ready for Angry Steve?
I am.
Okay, hold on.
Are you ready to be angry, Steve?
I don't know. I'm a little
I think he's going to make you jealous.
I'm feeling a little anxious here, Dan.
Are you?
Should I be nervous?
Oh, I don't think so. I think you've seen this before.
He had to do it to me. He had to do it to me.
On camera, too. What a prick.
Oh, man. I'll get you, Dan. Nah, that's awesome. I love that piece. Out of all the video game art, so definitely Legacy Kane series up there. That game, because I got it as a kid, is one of the most iconic ones to me as a kid. So that's like just cool to see it's out there. I also never thought I would know who owned it. I saw it sold in Heritage as like a VHS cover or something back a long time ago.
Somebody bought it as a VHS cover for $600 or something, and then I noticed that, and I tried to buy it from them on the sly, but every time I made an offer, the price went up. I eventually got it for $25,000, and it's been with me since.
Yeah, I was just looking at the Legacy of Kain Blood Omen on Heritage, and they called it a Sega Genesis title, so I don't think they were too keen on what was where back then.
That was really all those couple of auctions were really early before they had even a video game department or anything. Yeah. So Heritage had very little knowledge about that at the time. Yeah.
So here's a question I definitely got for you, Dan. And I remember maybe a few things you told me in the past, but what is one or two of the most memorable pickups that you ever had on the art in the art world? What really stood out for you?
I mean, the purchases, I guess, from Greg Martin and then especially Greg Winters, because Greg kept everything he ever did. And he was like the most prolific artist I've come across, really. You know, so when – and I – so he had everything he ever did. He had worked on some really, you know, amazing titles like ROM, all the Mega Mans from 3 up. You know, so 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, X, X2, X3, Little Samson, you know, just tons of big Wild Guns, tons of big titles, well-known, high-budget Nintendo, Super Nintendo kind of titles. And, you know, he had all of them. And you know, I figured out who he was and whatever and tried to, you know, kind of contact him from years. He didn't want to have anything to, he didn't want to discuss it at first because he was building a new house. Eventually, like 4 years later, myself and another collector, you know, agreed to purchase what he had. It was a ton of money at the time for us, especially relative to what, you know, games were selling for at the time and, you know, the money that we could raise and whatever. And, but at the end of the day, like, we got 150 paintings out of it. Not all of them were, you know, box art. Not all of them, you know, were huge titles or whatever. But there were 150 paintings, and we had a draft. That was like the most. That was the most sort of fun day I think I've ever had in collecting, of having this Excel list of 150 pieces. And thinking to myself, oh, okay, am I going to try to get Little Samson or, you know, Mega Man X? Like, and I prepared for, you know, days before as to try to get the order of how it would draft things. And, eventually, so that was, you know, the number one most memorable purchase. Eventually they were paid for, they were shipped, you know, to me. And the first painting in the first package was this one here. You can see that. But that was the first piece in the first package. And so, you know, yeah, it was just really memorable because there was such, I mean, when I first opened that package, I sat and stared at this for like 30 minutes before even going on to the next one. And there were 20 paintings in that first package. And I just sat there for hours looking at them all. So, you know, that was bar none. I don't think there'll ever be an opportunity for me to have a cooler kind of moment in collecting than receiving that first package from them.
It's pretty wild, guys. All right, yeah. Let's say you're in the draft, ROM, because you're the big Mega Man guy. Mega Man 3 through X3. Which one you drafted first? Four. And which one you drafted last?
4 and honestly, probably like...
Well, the Game Boy ones, too, don't forget.
Game Boy ones are okay. Pretty... Yeah, 5 cover art is really cool. I like 5 on Game Boy. But definitely 4. And then probably... 7 looks really cool, but 7 would be at the bottom of my list, I think, just because I've never played 7. I've just stuck to the 8-bit and the Game Boy.
And what's funny about saying last is those are all beautiful paintings, so there's no loser in that lot.
For sure. I'm looking at that.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, I've barely seen the cover art for 7, but it was amazing. Thank you for showing us.
When we drafted them, I think the order went X3. I think it went X3, X2, X. Those were the first three, and then Then I think it went 5. And then it might have gone like 5 on the Game Boy, and then 7. and then, you know, a couple of the other kind of 8-bit ones, and then Little Samson, and then back to Mega Man, and then Wizard of Oz, of all things. That was not my pick. And then Wild Guns, and then everything else.
Ooh, Wild Guns, that art's real good. Where did Mega Man Soccer go? Or was that on there?
Yeah, it was in the, you know, it was in there. It was towards the end of the 8 and 16 bit, but before most of the Game Boy stuff, with the exception of Game Boy 5. And Game Boy 1's a different artist, so it's really just 2, 3, 4, 5.
Gotcha.
What about the Wily Wars on Game Boy?
Oh, the Wily Wars? Like the that's not Winners. That's like a Cell. There was a Wily Wars unreleased. So you called it alternate, and you know, I've never really liked that term. I think it's I find it more accurate to just say unpublished version. But anyways, there's an unpublished Sega Genesis Wily Wars. That one at the very bottom of the Mega Man stuff, because it was unpublished.
Gotcha. Yeah, Mega Drive was, right? So it would have been a completely, would have been a European artist, maybe?
Yeah, I said that wrong, too. It's Mega Man Dr. Wily's Revenge, not Wars. That one had a little different style than some of the other Mega Man. It's just his posing on it.
That's a different artist.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why. So that wasn't part of this draft or anything. But yeah, the draft was just so much fun. You know, so much fun. And I had at the time kind of documented the draft order and everything. And then sadly, like, I had it on this laptop that crapped out, and I wasn't able to recover the document in any way. And so unfortunately, I've lost the draft order. But, you know, I remember the stuff at the very top anyways.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. What about Greg Martin? Did you get those all in a group, or did you?
Those were, you know, early on, probably 2008. And, you know, they were in a series of buys, probably three individual kind of chunks. But those were tremendous too. Yeah. They're all I love his artwork. And, they're so bright and colorful, and he just, you know, he'd worked at Hanna-Barbera, so he was just incredible in terms of like giving the characters like expression and like a lifelike pose and action and everything. I loved all his stuff, and we did have drafts on those as well, but I don't remember it with quite the same detail or whatever. I'm getting old, I guess.
Yeah. One of the ones, I think maybe Bill, the Flintstones, I think Surprise at Dinosaur Peak. That was Greg Martin, mm-hmm. wasn't it? I can't remember mm-hmm. if that was on one of your list of games to get Bill, or you were after a bunch of the NES games at one point.
Yeah. I guess that's the one that's like $1,000, isn't it?
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah, the cartridge. Yeah.
I don't remember if that was on your list or not. We were talking about expensive ones you wanted. I know. So like DuckTales 2, that was Martin too, I think, right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yep.
Okay, I got some research to do with all these Gregs. You know.
Well, you know, go if you're interested. If anybody's interested that's listening, go to originalvideogameart.com and look up Greg Martin, and you can see some of the stuff he did. That'll tell you without you having to try to research and blow your brains out.
Oh, that sounds like a great resource. Yeah. I will definitely be checking it out.
And by the way, Dan, my strategy for finding art these days is when I find an artist and I go, oh, they look like somebody that maybe did video game art, I go to originalvideogameart.com and I say, are they on the list? If they are, then I skip over it and I go to the next one.
The name's been published. I'm late to the party.
Yeah.
On to the next one. Yeah.
There's so many artists out there.
That's right. Because at the end of the day, you know, like when I started, there was nothing on the internet, which was really hard. But the flip side of that, the silver lining to that was that, you know, if you found somebody, nobody else had found them first.
Yeah. I'm waiting for that one day, but it'll come. I know. I send enough inquiries out. Eventually, I'll find something. I'll unturn some kind of stone.
But it's exciting when you do get something. You know, it really is.
Yeah, what would you recommend? So somebody that's just starting out, like for me, I try to do research and I look up info and then I shoot a message to an artist and sometimes I hear nothing back. Sometimes I hear something or they go, nah, I didn't do any video games or I sold them years ago. What would you recommend like somebody wanting to go try to source or find their own artwork of these days?
I mean, I think the place to start just for anybody collecting is probably like the Facebook group, because that's kind of the hub where, you know, you kind of get to know other collectors, kind of start to learn about the hobby. And the Facebook group is, I should know this, Original Video Game Art Collectors, I believe. So
that's correct.
Facebook.com groups, Original Video Game Art Collectors / or whatever. And, or you could just search original video game art, you know, under groups and I'm sure it'll come up. And, so I started that group about 5 years ago and, you know, Steve's a, enthusiastic participant and we've got lots of other people that, you know, either help or admin or participate. And so you can go there, learn a bit about it, talk to people, you know, in kind of, you know, maybe figure out what not to bother looking for because somebody else has already got it, like you said, Steve.
Yeah.
And just kind of learn a little bit. I mean, in terms of, you know, where to find things, I mean, quite honestly, the answer is anywhere you can. I mean, that's the approach I take because at the end of the day, like, no one's going to hand it to you on a silver platter if it's something that hasn't been found. And if it's something that's been found, or you know, they're going to want money for you to pry it from their collection. But there's also stuff that's publicly available on Heritage. I mean, look, in the course of this conversation, we talked about Gex and we talked about Ghoul Patrol. And there's one or two others. There's a 3DO cover, Crash and Burn. And there's also, what's the last one? There's another published box art on Heritage right now, too, for the signature in February. And then in addition to those four, there's about another 25 that are preliminaries or, you know, in-game or magazine or whatever. So, okay, there's four published box covers available right now, but there's like 30 if you take the broader view. Yeah. And, you know, 26 of those 30 are going to be more reasonably priced as
well. There's a Maniac Mansion.
You know,
I saw that.
Yeah, that's right. There's a Maniac Mansion kind of promo piece or whatever. Mm-hmm.
There's a couple more box arts on there.
It's not a bad place to start.
There's a couple more box arts on there, too. There's a McGinty PS1.
Pitball, cover. That's right.
Pitball, yeah.
Pitball.
I think there's one other McGinty in there, too, that popped up.
Nitro Racers?
That's it, yeah. 3DO. Yeah,
but 3DO, right. So I guess there's five. Yeah, I guess there's five. Yeah, and, you know, if people are wondering what kind of prices they go for and stuff, I mean, it's really hard to say. You don't know until auction day in some sense. But I mean, when it comes to those pieces, like the 3DO stuff is going to be, you know, less valuable. That's going to be kind of like, I would guess that those will be kind of 2 to 4K or something. Whereas something like Ghoul Patrol is going to be in five figures for sure. It's just a matter of, you know, is it going to be 15? Is it going to be 25? Is it going to be 30? I mean, it's going to be something like that, you know, because that's a full-fledged Super Nintendo title, decent title that'll, cool. That'll get some money.
It's a cool piece of art. My guess was over 20.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Yeah.
The Gex one's an interesting one. I'm not sure where that one lands. I definitely think it's a five-figure piece, but I'm not sure where that one goes.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's a little interesting, and it's got a little minor condition issue. There's a little bit of water staining at the top. I tend to think that that's kind of 5 to 10 somewhere, but I guess we'll see.
Man,
yeah, I guess we'll see.
We could probably have a whole other discussion about arcade art. I just saw the –
Well, you're right. You're right.
Simpsons has it looks like a photocopy of the Simpsons arcade game.
You don't know the joy you just put into Dan's life when you mentioned arcade art.
That's a whole other probably 2 hour conversation.
Well, bring up pinballs and he'll get really excited.
Yeah, that's
I meant to ask. I forgot who on the call is into pinball. Anybody?
I mean, I play, but yeah, definitely. I've seen enthusiasts, and I don't scratch the surface on that one.
Gotcha. And Bill, you're not much of an enthusiast.
Casual. I mean, if I stumble across real pinball, you know, at a barcade or anywhere that you can still find one, I'll stop and play it. But I'm not good at it or, you know, practiced or anything like that. But it's definitely really cool to see. I enjoy video game pinball. Honestly, I have a lot of games in my collection that are pinball games. So, but I'm not. Yeah, something I'd actually like to get into at some point. It's interesting to me for sure.
The reason Steve brings it up is because he knows I'm a spaz for. Because look, pinball cabinets are the same, right? They're a product that needed artwork to attract customers. So there's pinball artwork out there too, right? And there's one artist in particular that, you know, I'm a huge fan of that I brought a piece to show if you guys want to see it. I'll just drag it out and, well, you know what, whether you like it or not, I'm going to show you. So,
well, I'm excited.
Oh yeah.
So, as you guys will have seen, like almost every square inch of a pinball machine, is covered in art of one kind or another, you know, to make it pop and make it stand out and whatever. But at the end of the day, like, in the same way that, you know, the box art is sort of the big deal for the video game, for the pinball, it's that back glass, right? That's got the huge image. That's what pops. That's how you remember the game more so. So this is the painting for Medieval Madness, if you've ever played that. And John Yousey is the artist. He's incredible. I love his artwork. And I figured since there was going to be four of us on the call, I was hoping there'd be one other pinhead. But, you know, if you guys have at least, you know, played a little bit and maybe you've seen Medieval Madness, you can see, like, you know, this is the painting that they then photographed and reproduced as the back glass.
I think you showed me that piece before. That's an unbelievable piece of art just in its own sake.
He's so good. He's so good. And the thing with pinball art that's really cool too is that they were such big budget projects that, like, the video game artwork, there was a lot of tight deadlines and whatever. The pinball guys had more time. They were given more time, more kind of budget. Like, a lot of the times they were hired internal to the company. So it was a big project and they were supposed to go all out and make it look as big, as flashy as possible. So it's kind of cool from that sense too. Like, the some of the images of the actual paintings are just really all out. So
yeah, everything I've seen of yours that's pinball, which isn't too many, I've seen like maybe two, it always blows my mind how high a quality it is. And what's the art market like on those compared to video game art?
Well, you know,
are they more expensive or in general? I know that it matters the piece, but
the artists are, so, you know, I would say it's less developed. I went and bought as many of my favorites as I could find, but they weren't cheap. The pinball artists are like kind of well known in the pinball community. They're sort of, you know, pinball famous in a way, right? Like, they've got kind of fanboys to some extent. And so I don't know if it's because of that or because of, maybe it's just because of all the work they put into them. You know, you're not buying one even from the artist for like a cheap price. They're going to cost some money. But for that reason, there is still stuff available, like at the source. So you know, in general, like the guys that I've found that are, you know, more willing to kind of let stuff go have wanted for a back glass painting like that, you know, kind of 10 grand or maybe, you know, sometimes more. Whereas, you know, other guys that have been less willing to let things go, you know, I mean, I had one guy quote me 75 on one of them, you know, so I didn't buy that one. It is what it is, but they're wonderful. There's still some available at the source. The market's not very developed, but that's, I think, because just a lot of people don't kind of know or have thought about it, like, at all. Like, I've, you know, like, the video game art is starting to be known a little bit, but I think the pinball is kind of behind in terms of just people even thinking about it.
Yeah. It like blows my mind that you can sell like a Super Mario 64. Now, granted, this is a couple of years ago in the yeah. high for 1.5 yeah. million, but some yeah. of these video game arts are like, you know, 20 grand or whatnot. Because there's, I always felt like there's just as many, even more video game enthusiasts than there are like comic book collectors at this point in time. But it just, like, they haven't moved into all the collectible sectors, it feels
just,
like.
Just the history isn't there yet. Yeah, exactly. You know, look, these conversations that we've had around, you know, value and whatever, like, they're the same questions everybody has when they're first kind of exposed to it, right? So with comics, art has been around since the, you know, been sold, you know, for decades. It's just kind of less known. So there's just a little kind of catching up in terms of it being as known, but, you know, that's changing too. I mean, look, when the Facebook group started, there was a lot less people that kind of knew about it. And then if I back up to, you know, when I started, like in late 2007, nobody knew about it. And I wasn't in a rush to tell them, by the way, because I was trying to purchase everything I could. So I really didn't.
So that's why I didn't know, Dan.
I mean, look, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I love, you know, sharing as much information as possible, but I'm like everybody else. I like owning it too, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did try and, you know, kind of purchase what I could for a period of time and then eventually kind of move to more of a kind of sharing mindset afterwards.
Yeah, it makes sense. I was just giving you a hard time there.
No, I get it. Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine.
No, it's interesting. I've kind of, in the back of my mind, there's this whole era of illustration art, and it's something it's still done a little bit, because you see it with Magic the Gathering art in particular, and it seems mm-hmm. pretty popular because people are paying mm-hmm. a couple grand on up for some of these newer Magic the Gathering paintings, but for the most part, traditional art isn't really used as much. So I kind of think like maybe like 30, 40 years from now, there'll be this zone of illustration art where it's just like collectors that go after that period of art and style, because it is pretty unique, I think. Even like the newer stuff is a little more modern style to it. So I don't know. That's where my head's kind of been at.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point about, you know, Magic, like in terms of published paintings. That's where a lot of the new ones kind of end up. And, you know, Bill and Rom, you guys may or may not know, I don't know, but the early cards, like the, you know, Alpha, Beta, Arabians, Legends, you know, all those early sets, the artwork for those is like 5x7, like the size of a NES box. It's very small. And I did have a few of those early on, but I just wasn't drawn to them enough because they were so small. The newer stuff is a little bigger and whatever, but then you don't get the iconic cards, right? So it's kind of a trade-off as to what you want to go for. Force of Will from Alliances, which, you know, if you guys have played Magic, you probably remember. That sold on Heritage within the last 6 months, probably within the last 3 months. I want to say that sold for 350,000, maybe.
Yeah, that was a big sale.
Yeah, yeah. And it sold a few alpha pieces and whatever before, like Demonic Tutor sold, JM Die Tome sold. Those were, I think Tutor was about 175 and Tome was maybe 110. And those were a couple of years previous, but, you know, but it goes to show it isn't necessarily just the oldest piece or whatever, necessarily. Like Force of Will, just really iconic since, you know, since Alliance is still used a lot, and that just that terrific image, like just that home run image, and then larger too, like about four times the size of one of the early pieces. So, you know, different things like that can affect value.
You know, you're talking about the Magic stuff. Like, I kind of started really getting into it during like Ice Age, but you don't hear much about that era versus like. I mean, Ice Age was pretty close to, you know, Arabian Nights and all that stuff, right? Like,
wasn't that far?
Yeah, yep. It's crazy to me. Like, everyone's all talking about that stuff, but then you get to that point, like the, you know, the Jester's Cap and things like that.
Yeah,
I remember being when I was younger. I was like, man, that thing's going to be worth a lot, and it kind of got like just pushed to the wayside.
Yeah.
And but the art for Ice Age, I thought was really cool. I loved it.
It was. It was very cool. And look, to your point, you know, if the art for Jester's Cap came up at auction, that'd be six figures. That'd be big money. For the reasons you said, everybody remembers it. Like, look, mm-hmm. here we are in 2024 talking about a 1990, what, five or something card?
Yeah, 95.
You know, and I could picture it in my head. You can probably picture it in your head. And, you know, that kind of stuff drives value if it's really memorable like that.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I always thought
remember
was
anything else. Sorry, go ahead.
The one thing I always thought was interesting with Magic is they actually put the illustrator name on the card. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them, you could actually probably find them if you knew how to contact them.
That's exactly right. And so I think, for that reason, a lot of them were contacted really early on. It was easy. It wasn't so with video games. I think another thing that was kind of fun from that point of view is that you didn't have to educate people on what their favorites were. Like growing up, you know, Bill, you probably looked at those Konami boxes and you thought, holy, this is amazing artwork. I love these Konami boxes. But you had no idea who Tom Du Bois was. You had no clue. Whereas, you know, you might have looked at the art for Black Lotus and gone, oh, yeah, man, Chris Rush, that's pretty cool. Oh, and I like his Granite Gargoyle, and I like his All Hallows Eve. And you could kind of make a connection to the style and the name, right? A little harder with game stuff. But that's kind of, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, the Facebook group and originalvideogameart.com and so on is kind of filling in, is helping you realize that, you know, sometimes you had favorites, you just didn't know it.
So what I want to know is what kind of oddball ones you got tucked away there? You got a Bubble Bath Babes or something in the collection? There's a couple odd ones out there for the NES and stuff.
That's a great question.
Did you find any of those oddities? Peekaboo Poker or any of those ones over the years?
Not the Panesians, no. In general, like the unlicensed stuff is, you know, lower quality art. You know, it just is. But
it's just funny to me.
Oh yeah. nothing's leaping out at me, but I know Adam has this great unlicensed piece. Ultimate Stomp Man, where it's, you know, it's got the dude with the pecs and the gun and the Ferrari screaming down the road and the octopus coming out of his crotch, and like it's a crazy image, right? If you Google that, and it's got the eagle, I think, like it's so America, you know. that's one that's kind of, you know, from that point of view, that I find entertaining or funny or just cool to look at because it's so over the top.
Yeah, I remember that because I've owned that cart before, and I remember looking at it and be like, man, this is a wild cover art.
Yeah.
It came in a gold cartridge too, or something like that.
Yeah,
just to accentuate all that giant eagle and everything.
And then they had that little star shape cut out of the box, so that you could see that it was you could see the gold behind it, I believe.
Yeah, I think that those were the ones that had the switch in the back too on the cartridge, where they had the little window.
See, this is where, you know, the fact that I was a sealed collector is going to show through, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
They had a switch on the back, and it's like, if it doesn't work on A, turn it to B.
Actually, yeah, I remember seeing that on loose and CIB copies. You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing to me, but I think it probably had something to do with the pirate, the yeah. pirating thing.
If our product doesn't work, try this. Like, what? Right there you go. There you go. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. Before we hang up, I'll leave you with one more.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm gonna pull one more out too.
Bill and I'll just sit here because you know.
I just got boxes is all I got. Original boxes.
Which I'm like, man, you know, that's good, right? And then you see this stuff, you're like, oh man.
Nope.
So. Oh, Steve's gone.
Okay. Yeah, he went to go grab something for himself, something too.
Oh, nice.
And you know, we're just sitting here, just being observers.
That's perfect.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
All right.
Steve's back. All right.
We'll see this magic.
Yeah. So this is the most I've ever spent on anything that didn't have a roof.
Oh.
It's in a frame too.
It's in a frame. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So, yeah, so that's the Contra art. It first came out in Europe as Grisor, and the image was repurposed from there onto the North American box. It's Bob Wakeland. He was a European artist, so it makes sense that it came from a European box. Yeah, he did all the ocean stuff. And even before I started, European guys had bought Bob's artwork. Sadly, he's passed away now. And so by the time I found Bob around 2008, he had already long since sold it. I eventually found the person that owned it by putting out a public offer for $100,000. And he wasn't interested at all in selling it at that price. We had discussions back and forth, and a year later, you know, I managed to buy it, you know, for considerably more. But so that's why I say it's the most I've ever spent on anything that didn't have a roof. But you know, it just the opportunity to get like a classic NES title like that, one I remembered from elementary school, one that one that I played, a series I loved, like I couldn't turn it down, you know? So
yeah, that's
one of my favorites.
That's an awesome painting. And I know that Bill probably can't even put words in his mouth right now saying that.
Speechless.
That's right. Yes. One of your Konami classics.
Oh yeah.
I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to see the Contra Force one.
I wish. No, Tom didn't really have much of his artwork at all. So, you know,
I don't think they gave a lot of it back to him, right?
Yeah, they didn't.
No.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about like some of the artists, some are more organized than others. So the way I've always understood it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Dan, but there was a price you paid for the image and the ability to use the image. And there was a price you paid to keep the original. And not everybody bought the original, but some just didn't ship it back if you weren't organized or kept track of it. They would leave it, and you'd have to call them and get it back. So some artists were great about getting their work back, and others just kind of went and got lost to time or stayed where they went.
That's pretty much right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got something you wanted to share with us, Steve.
Yeah, yeah. Just because you were talking about it, I figured I'd pull out the slider alternate from Greg Martin. So.
Yeah.
I really like this piece just because it's so cartoony. Like, even the sun and the moon, like, you can tell the Greg Martin when you look at this. If you've seen a Greg Martin piece, mind you, the very Hanna-Barbera type artwork, too. I always thought he kind of fit in there, Looney Tunes almost. But also, I think I also now own the record for the most mats on a piece on the group, according to somebody in the comments. But the when I went to the framers, they like love this piece so much. And they're like, we got to put a million mats on this thing. We've been wanting to do this forever. There's so many colors. Can we do it? And I was like, eh, what the heck? We put it together and it looked all right. But
and the video doesn't do justice to how bright the colors are at all. Like, I'm looking at it on the video as you're holding it up, and I know in person it's like it pops even more.
Yeah, and I'll superimpose in here a scan picture, but yeah, it looks nice. These things look awesome. But thanks. So that's everything you wanted to share today, Dan. You kind of closed us out with such an amazing piece. I feel bad for showing Slider after that.
I didn't mean to one-up you. I just, we were getting to the end of the chat, and I thought, I've got it out, and I haven't shown it yet.
No, so, that's awesome. I appreciate you showing that.
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks, guys. It's been a lot of fun chatting.
Yeah
absolutely. And anybody that wants to check out Dan or his group, they have the OVGA podcast, so... That's the Original Video Game Art Podcast. What schedule do you guys release on YouTube?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Steve. it's about monthly. It's about monthly.
Okay.
So we've released five full episodes and then a little mini bonus one so far. So that's the scoop.
Nice. Yeah. And Dan had mentioned before, too, if you want to check out more information on original art, just go on over to the Facebook group, Original Video Game Art Collectors. You can also find OVGA.com or OriginalVideoGameArt.com?
OriginalVideoGameArt.com.
Yeah. So that's also the website he was mentioning with all the information on the artists. So lots of good resources compared to when Dan started, having the buy off list, as he mentioned. But certainly reach out and later this summer, I believe I'm actually going to be a guest with at one of the cons, so I'll provide more details when that comes up. But some of my art will be on display from it looks like it. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll be here in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.